Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. First off, I want to thank everyone today who has sent get well wishes, thoughts, and prayers for my daughter, who, as many of you know, had surgery Wednesday for a tumor on her pituitary gland at the base of her brain. Thankfully, she's doing very well, and I'm pleased to report that the biopsy came back clean, no cancer, so she's expected to have a full recovery. Since I've been spending time at the hospital this week, today's show will have some Best of East County episodes rerun, but we'll also start off with some top news items today. Plus, I'll be speaking with some East County Boy Scout members who are being honored as heroes after saving a woman's life. It's heartwarming to see young people like this who care enough to step in and take action in a life or death situation. We'll also tell you about a controversy over the future of our federal forest lands countywide and the future of development in Alpine, where some people want to double the size of the community and others are raising concerns about what this may mean for fire danger, water supplies, and the preservation of wilderness areas nearby. We also have some exciting news for disabled people about a new FDA device just approved that can help. Some paraplegics walk again. We'll bring you some taxing issues before the El Cajon City Council this week. Plus, we've got news about some landmark court cases impacting everything from cell phone users' privacy rights to the rights of protesters and patients at women's health care clinics. And if you're ready for some fireworks, be sure to stay tuned for our Destination East County segment covering all the Independence Day activities over the next week, including picnics, a parade, a political barbecue with members of Congress, live musical entertainment, children's activities, and, of course, fireworks. From all of us to all of you, we wish you a happy and wonderful 4th of July weekend, this Independence Day weekend, here on the East County Magazine Show, independent media for our region. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And I'm here today to talk about four very special young people, members of scout troops here in East County who helped to save a woman's life recently. They are Adriana Castro, Wyatt Holcomb, Sierra Holcomb, his older sister, and Patrick French. And I have two of these remarkable young people here with us today on the show. Welcome, Adriana and Wyatt. Thank you for being here.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. Wyatt, tell us what scout troop you're in and how old you are and where you live.
I'm in scout troop 355. I am 17 years old and I live in Jamul, California.
Jamul, very good. Mm-hmm. And you were 16 years old when this occurred, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes, I was 16.
So. Okay. And your scout troop is located in?
Spring Valley.
Spring Valley. Mm-hmm. Very good. Adriana, how about you?
I am 16 years old. I live in Lemon Grove, and I'm part of Venture Crew 1833 in El Cajon.
Very good. And you were?
15.
15 years old when this occurred. So I want to take you back to the date of June 8th, 2013. The four of you were down there for graduation in the family, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were walking along the shoreline, enjoying the view, the beach, and then tell us what happened, Wyatt.
We heard somebody yelling for help, and we looked over, and he was like, call 911. And we saw the door to a car open. It wasn't parked all the way straight in the parking lot. And a woman was passed out on the street, and she had an injury.
So this was a fisherman who found her and didn't have a cell phone and needed somebody to call 911.
Yes.
So, Adriana, what did you do?
I always have my cell phone with me like a normal teenager, but I got it out and I called 911, and at first I couldn't get through. We were in kind of like a hazy area, so my service was kind of spotty. Wow. And then I was going to call one of the adults that was with us on my phone and ask them if they could come down, but my phone locked from calling 911.
Wow.
But then eventually I got a call from 911, and I explained to them what was going on and asked them to send paramedics down here to help the woman.
Very good. But you guys didn't wait for paramedics to arrive. With the scout training that you had, all four of you had some first aid training, I understand. So what happened next?
Well, what happened is first we kind of like scanned. We went into what we call scout mode, mm-hmm. and we decided like what needed to be done. And when I saw her having trouble with her phone, I was like, I'm a cross-country runner, so I decided to run and get my dad, who is a deputy sheriff.
Wow, so this victim really had the right combination of people in the right place at the right time. You're a cross-country runner, and you ran to get your dad, mm-hmm. the deputy sheriff, because obviously this woman was bleeding severely, and at some point, I guess it became obvious to you that she'd been a victim of a crime or some kind of an attack, correct?
Yes.
And I should add, listeners, that to protect the identity of the victim, we've been asked not to disclose details about her name or the details of her injury, because this case may yet be coming to trial. So, you have an older sister who was also there. Tell us about her background. Sierra.
She's kind of been, before I was born, she was the one that my dad always gave all the survival training and the first aid to. So she's kind of like, she always says that they wrote Hunger Games after her.
Okay. So she not only had scout training, but I understand that she is also an active member of a local CERT team, which stands for Community Emergency Response Team. So again, this fortuitous combination of just the right people at the right time. So what did Sierra do to help?
She kind of took charge and went up to the woman and was administering first aid.
You were there also at this time, Adriana, while Wyatt was off running to get help.
Yes.
And I understand you were talking to her. She was conscious. Is that correct?
Well, she was partially conscious. Like, you could definitely tell that she was kind of out of it. Mm-hmm. But both Sierra and me started out talking to her. But then we noticed that there were adults and kids that started to line up. And they had all their phones out taking pictures.
Instead of helping, they were
They were just like, just standing there, not doing anything. But Sierra and me started out helping her, and then...
So you were able to find out, I understand, who she was, her name, you were asking her questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you guys were taking vital signs, too, is that
right?
Yeah,
Sierra took her vital signs.
And what kind of shape was she in, other than...
She wasn't in a very good condition. She was really pale in the face, and there was a lot of blood loss.
Now, at some point, a male nurse came onto the scene, I understand.
Yes.
And then what happened?
There was a male nurse that was down there, and he came over, and he had his first aid kit, and handed it to Sierra, because the woman didn't seem very sure of men being around her, so Sierra was taking care of her.
Right. Some of her injuries, I understand, were in areas where they had to access private areas, remove some clothing to get a look at the injuries. And
yes.
So it speaks very highly, I think, for Sierra's skills that, from what I understand, the male nurse that was there actually stood aside and allowed Sierra to administer the first aid and said, I'm here if you need me, but it might be better if you take care of this.
Yeah, Sierra, she seemed like she had it handled, and I made sure that she didn't need anything from me at the moment. And me and the other boy, Patrick, were dealing with crowd control and like keeping the people back and asking them if they could please take the children away so that they didn't see anything. Mm-hmm. And making sure that like cars that were stopping to help, like telling them that we got this covered, like they can just like keep driving instead of making like a traffic jam.
Very good. So then what happened when Wyatt, when your dad, the deputy sheriff, got on the scene and when the ambulance finally arrived?
Yeah, by the time we arrived, the ambulance was showing up, so we just kind of went to the paramedics and asked if they still needed help. They said that they handled it, so they put her in a gurney and put her in the ambulance and left.
Now, we also have with us Kelly Holcomb, who is the mother of Wyatt and Sierra. Kelly, you must be just so proud of these young people.
Oh, of course. Of course. They're amazing. They're just amazing.
Now, first of all, I need to ask, do you have any update on this victim? Did she survive these terrible injuries?
Well, she was in the hospital while the police department contacted us. She did survive, and they did say that because of these four kids and their scout knowledge, that they were attributing her survival with their quick thinking. she is doing well as far as we know, but because of the possible trial, we really haven't had too much contact.
Very good news yeah. that she survived. Yes. Thanks to the heroic actions of these four young people. And for those who are wondering, by the way, the Venture Scouts, the two young ladies involved in this story are involved in, is actually a co-ed troop. That's something new from back when my son was in Scouts years ago. But we certainly learned that the survival skills and the first aid skills that they teach in Scouts can be so valuable, a skill that really more and more people need to know, because you never know when you might be the Good Samaritan that happens onto a what could have been a tragic scene. This had to be a really traumatic experience for all of you, you know, seeing all this the blood and this severe injury. How have you been coping with that? Was it difficult to get through that?
Well, not really. I mean, they did offer us afterwards, like, trauma treatment, but I mean, the rest of the people at the party didn't even know, because we went back and, you know, started roasting marshmallows like nothing ever happened.
So. Wow, so you're very stoic about it without going through the counseling.
Yeah, I mean, definitely for all of us, it most likely, like, a shock, because you see a woman, like, blood, and it's like, whoa, what's happening? Mm-hmm. But it wasn't really, like, traumatic. It was just shocking, I would say.
You just went into that sort of automatic pilot of what your training had taught you to do. And I understand, Adriana, that this was not the first time that you've been called on to help in an emergency situation.
No, well, my grandma, she has diabetes, and there has been a few times where she has fallen unconscious. So me and my mom and my family, we've had to go to her house and call 911 and make sure that she's okay. And over by my house, there have been quite a few car accidents. I've gone out and made sure that they don't need anything, and the cops are right down the street, but just made sure that everything and everyone was okay.
Good for you. So you're really a pro at this by now. Okay. So, Kelly, what are the two scouts that aren't with us today? What have they gone on to do since then, Patrick and Sierra?
Patrick is actually at St. John's University in New York, studying theater.
Very good.
Sierra works at Big Five and is going to Cuyamaca and Grossmont and is looking at joining the United States Public Health Service to be able to maybe go on to Indian reservations and give a little bit of medical help to them. And she wants to give back more than she already has.
Fantastic. She sounds like a marvelous young woman.
Sierra is also part of Venture Crew 1833 mm-hmm. and is now an advisor, because she aged Excellent. Out at 21. And Patrick, both of them, they are not here because they're working at scout camps in leadership capacities. That's what they do in the summer.
Very and good.
So that's why they're not here.
Now, we have saved the best news for last, and that is that these four scouts are being honored with a very special honor. Wyatt, can you tell us the name of the award that you're receiving?
The award is called the Medal of Merit. It is the second highest award you can get in scouting.
Correct. And this is being presented to all four of these young people here. To put that in perspective, in 2012, which is the last year before this event occurred, there were only 126 Medals of Merit awarded in the entire United States. And cumulatively, since 1945, when they began giving out the Medal of Merit in scouting, there's only been 6,229 of these awards presented. So on behalf of East County Magazine, we really want to congratulate all four of these wonderful young people for their heroic actions in saving a life.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Very much. What are you planning next? What are you going to go on to do?
Well, I was thinking for a while to go out for the United States Marine Corps and maybe share my scout knowledge with the Marines.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, they can certainly use people with some medical skills in the Marine Corps.
And I'm also working on my Eagle project, which I'm hoping to get done by October.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations and good luck on that. As I say, my son was an Eagle Scout, and I know exactly how much work and how much effort and dedication it takes to achieve that level.
Thank you.
How about you?
I'm a senior in high school right now, so definitely like looking at college applications that start being due in October. but I'm looking at going up to the University of San Francisco and pursuing my dreams of becoming a writer with creative writing and journalism.
Wow.
And I'm actually coming out with my own book at the end of the year for my senior project. Wonderful. For my school.
Very good. And I know Wyatt has shared that he's working on a history project as well and has an interest in journalism, so I'd like to invite both of you to get involved with East County Magazine and bring some of these wonderful stories that you have to share with our community.
I would actually like to add one thing. I know it's going to be cheesy, but...
That's okay.
She was like, oh, you can't just ask me to prom. You have to do it in an extraordinary way.
That's and right. We forgot that the two of you are boyfriend and girlfriend. Mm-hmm. So this... Okay.
So, I know it's cheesy, I know this seems like it would be in some kind of romantic comedy, but you said go extraordinary, and when am I going to get a chance to be on the radio? So, I know it's not for, like, another year, but would you go to prom with me?
Yes.
All right!
Yeah. Well, there you go. You heard it right here on the East County Magazine show. Very good. I think that's the first time we've played matchmaker on the show, but there's a first for everything. Congratulations. I couldn't see a better matchup out there than the two of you. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us here today on the
thank
East County Magazine
show. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
At the El Cajon City Council meeting on Tuesday, council members considered issues ranging from a police dog's retirement to hookah lounges after Mayor Bill Wells gaveled the session to order. Council member Star Bales displayed items that she purchased at El Cajon's recent America on Main Street event, items that she will proudly wear at the city's Independence Day celebration at Kennedy Park on July 4th. The council then voted to retire Turbo, an El Cajon police dog, and give ownership of the dog to Officer Thompson, Turbo's longtime handler. But the most heated discussion at the meeting concerned filing liens on properties of owners who owe money to the city for weed abatement, mandatory trash service, and sidewalk repair. The staff recommendation was to authorize the city clerk to record the amount owed as a lien on the property and forward the list to the county tax assessor for billing on the owner's next property tax bill. Out of 897 mandatory trash service accounts, there were 570 delinquent accounts. The assistant city manager argued that placing a lien on properties and forwarding the bill to the county tax assessor was a common practice and appropriate for El Cajon. No one came forward to object to their trash bill. However, Carrie Mattern objected to the charges for weed abatement by the city, stating that he had paid two workers $150 each to clear his lot and that a neighbor used his truck to haul off trash left by others. Carrie said he tried to talk to weed abatement but repeatedly got no answer, only voicemail. He claimed the city's work was unnecessary and that if the city had communicated with him, he would have done that work himself. George Miller, who recently had a stroke and limped visibly to the speaker's stand, explained that he has maintained his vacant property for 30 years and has never before received a bill for weed abatement. He said that he has received requests from the city in the past, but always met their requirements. Miller complained that $1,400 for 2 hours' work was excessive and sought relief for, or at least the opportunity to pay over time. A representative of Fire Prevention Services Incorporated, FPSI, a private company acting as subcontractor to the city, which does its inspections and abatement work, said the charges included administrative, assessment, and legal fees, but were not punitive. While weeding can be important to prevent brush fires, questions remain over the high costs charged by the private contractor to which the city has outsourced its weed abatement services. Councilman Kendrick later told East County Magazine that he and Councilman Bob McClellan have asked for a council discussion at a future meeting on the private company doing the weeding work. Councilmember McClellan said there needs to be a cell phone number that residents can call and speak to a real person because FPSI should be more responsive to property owners to perhaps avoid obnoxious charges after a string of unfruitful communications. Star Bales sought relief from Miller because he has, for 30 years, maintained the property himself without city services and obviously needs and deserves consideration at this time, she indicated. Despite these concerns, however, council voted to move forward with tax liens on these properties. As for sidewalk repairs made at 77 sites, 69 payments were received. The delinquent 8 sites totaled $7,240. The largest delinquent account was for sidewalk repair in front of Alvin Luckenbach's home. Luckenbach spoke affectionately, saying, "The offender is a beautiful liquid elm tree that was planted many years ago by his wife, though perhaps a bit too close to the sidewalk." Removing the cracked sidewalk revealed that roots from the elm tree indeed had lifted the sidewalk. Luckenbach said that he had fallen on difficult times financially, lost his job, but wanted to keep the tree. Mayor Pro Tem Gary Kendrick expressed sympathy for his circumstances. Despite concerns raised by property owners over costs, notification, and the necessity for these services, council declined to grant any extension of payment deadlines or other help for homeowners facing hefty bills and now tax liens on their properties. Councilman Kendrick insisted that they were all notified and could have hired someone else to do the work, a contention that doesn't take into consideration that low-income individuals and those with disabilities may be unable to afford such costs. While relief for homeowners facing tax liens were denied, Tipton Honda was granted a sales tax revenue sharing agreement. Amidst much backslapping and self-congratulation by council members, Councilman Gary Kendrick told East County Magazine the deal was made to help the car dealer afford to expand, which over the long term should increase the city's sales tax revenue base. It sweetens the pot and brings good paying jobs and more hard tax revenue, he said, adding that the city would benefit because the building gets reassessed when it is expanded. Similar incentives have been provided to other car dealers to bring more business to El Cajon, he added. The moratorium on hookah lounges and vape shops was extended. Mayor Pro Tem Gary Kendrick spoke against smoking as a health hazard, saying, "It is the responsibility of the city council to guard the public health, and it is therefore within the rights of the city to discourage these kinds of shops." The council voted unanimously to put up $10,000 for a San Diego County Neighborhood Reinvestment Grant to plant more grass for recreation leagues at Anza Elementary School. Finally, the council voted to write a letter of support for State Senator Joel Anderson's SB 1152, providing property tax exemptions to veterans organizations. The next El Cajon City Council meeting will be Tuesday, July 8th. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. The future of our federal forest lands hangs in the balance, along with future growth in alpine. San Diego supervisors heard heated testimony on Wednesday regarding plans to change densities for lands on private property within the Cleveland National Forest boundaries. The Forest Conservation Initiative, or FCI, was passed by voters back in 1993. It limited development on these lands to just one home for every 40 acres, but it expired in 2010. The county has rejected calls from environmentalists to want to enact the FCI protections into county law. Instead, supervisors on Wednesday voted to ask staff to create an environmental impact report based on staff recommendations that would increase densities in some areas and reduce densities in others. The hot potato here is alpine, where the Alpine Planning Group's majority called on supervisors to allow increased densities and development that could double the size of their rural town, which is more than staff wanted to do. That has drawn opposition from environmentalists, board member Lou Russo, the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, and the U.S. Forest Service itself, which raised concerns over fire dangers and preservation of federally protected wildlands adjacent to proposed development. In the end, Supervisor Diane Jacob asked for a special study of the alpine area. By a 3-to-1 vote, supervisors also asked staff to prepare an environmental impact report, or EIR. The dissenting vote, Supervisor Dave Roberts, wanted to see protections of the FCI adopted to reflect the will of the voters. He voiced fears over a court battle and said this vote could be a costly mistake. Supervisor Ron Roberts was absent, while Supervisors Bill Horn, Greg Cox, and Diane Jacob voted in favor. The move follows several years of efforts by supervisors, community planning groups, county planners, and staff to create new guiding documents for the forest lands for adoption into the county's general plan. As the hearing commenced, Duncan McFetridge, leader of Save Our Forests and Ranch Lands, told supervisors that when the FCI was passed, what the people of San Diego County recommended was that the forest be protected by indivisible forest-wide zoning outside the country towns. Urbanization is inconsistent with open space living, he said. All three of San Diego's rivers have their heads in Cleveland National Forest, so the plan before supervisors amounts to an attack on the watershed, he added. McFetridge said the plan has worked for 20 years to keep urbanization along the coast. He closed by telling supervisors that what's needed is what's missing from the proposal. For the sake of the people you represent, to analyze the forest initiative as one of the alternatives, he said. But supervisors rejected that request, with only Supervisor Dave Roberts speaking repeatedly and eloquently in favor of having the county's new general plan conform to the Forest Conservation Initiative that voters previously approved. Sarah Kent reminded everyone that the other supervisors still on the board today were for the Forest Conservation Initiative back in 1993 when it won voters' approval. She asked them to consider that sprawl is linked to climate change, since it leads to more traffic and cars spewing greenhouse gases. We need the same kind of leadership now, she said, that supervisors showed back then to protect the rural areas. Next came presentations on various specific geographic areas as part of the plan, with recommendations by staff, community planning groups, and the Planning Commission. In most cases, the staff proposals were actually more conservative, allowing less development than the planning groups or commissioners. For instance, in the Cuyamaca area, staff recommended allowing the number of parcels to rise slightly from 57 to 61, while the Planning Commission was willing to allow 76 parcels, allowing subdivision to add 19 more parcels for development than are currently allowed. As for Alpine, Travis Lyon represented the Community Planning Group. He said Alpine is at a crossroads and needs growth to bring in municipal services such as improved roads and a new high school sought by residents. The Alpine Mountain Empire Chamber of Commerce and the East County Chamber of Commerce both support the Alpine Planning Group's plan, which would lead to significantly higher densities. But Jack Hsu, co-chair of the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, said bluntly, "We do not need Alpine to double or triple in size." He called Alpine a rural town that does not need to grow further. He opposed the commercial development and further voiced concerns over proposals by staff, the planning commissioners, and the community planners. The Viejas tribe sent representatives who reminded supervisors that over the last 3 years they have held multiple meetings with community groups and talked to people on both sides of Willows Road, granted designation for light industrial. Even though as a sovereign nation, the tribe has no legal obligation to hold such community meetings. Viejas Vice Chairman Sita Welch told supervisors that the planning community's proposal for mixed rural and light industrial zoning in this area has broad support. He added, "This will meet future growth needs, working with the semi-rural nature of East County." The tribe owns 40 acres that fall under that planning grid, he said, in response to a question from Supervisor Jacob, who thanked the tribe for being good neighbors. A group of residents presented a sign letter asking that the East Willows area remain residential, citing concerns that the Walker property, which houses a clinic, has been eyed by a tribe outside our region for a possible off-reservation casino. Plans vary from 1,150 homes to staff's lower 1,081 residences and would keep the east side of Willows as light industrial. Testimony by the U.S. Forest Service, which owns Cleveland National Forest, raised some serious issues. William Metz, supervisor of Cleveland National Forest, expressed worries about the changes proposed around Alpine and echoed the Cleveland National Forest Foundation's worries about the community doubling or more in size. The Cleveland National Forest lands in this area are heavy with fuel loadings that makes them particularly hazardous from a fire suppression standpoint, Metz told supervisors. He added that the Pine Creek Wilderness due east of Alpine could have its character negatively impacted by the development proposed, and that groundwater withdrawal by these projects could negatively affect water resources for the National Forest. U.S. Forest Service Fire Chief Carlton Joseph voiced strong concerns that the new development proposed in the urban-rural interface areas of Alpine would increase fire suppression costs, decrease availability of water needed to fight those fires, and increase the risk to isolated structures in the area. The Forest Service asked that the county staff recommendations to preserve the 40-acre minimum lot size around Alpine be adopted, though the Forest Service did not support all of the staff's recommendations for the future of private properties on forest lands previously protected by the Forest Conservation Initiative countywide. Planning Commissioner Adam Day said the alpine lands account for about 5% of the forest areas under consideration, and that the proposed revision to the general plan would accommodate modest growth. He added that staff was ready to prepare the EIR if directed by supervisors, and at the end of a four-hour hearing, the supervisors did just that. Staff is expected to bring the EIR back to the board this winter when more public comment will be taken.
30 years ago, the rate of preventable trauma deaths in San Diego County was 21%. Today, the figure is less than 1%. The county attributes this dramatic change to the county trauma system, a successful public-private partnership between the County of San Diego and six designated trauma centers. The San Diego County trauma system has saved thousands of lives and continues to prevent deaths from traumatic injury, said County Supervisor Ron Roberts, who presented a proclamation to the trauma system this week. The trauma system has proven to be a vital resource for our community. The San Diego County trauma system is one of the first coordinated multi-center trauma systems established in the United States and remains a nationally recognized model. In fact, a person who sustains a life-threatening injury in San Diego County is twice more likely to survive than if the injury happened in practically any other part of the United States. A traumatic injury refers to a physical injury of sudden onset and severity, which require immediate medical interventions to save life and limb. Traumatic injuries could result from motor vehicle crashes, sports injuries, falls, natural disasters, and many other physical injuries. The local trauma system serves all of San Diego County and receives many patients from Imperial County hospitals. It is made up of the following six trauma centers: Palomar Medical Center, Scripps Memorial Hospital, La Jolla, Scripps Mercy Hospital, Hillcrest, Sharp Memorial Hospital, Rady's Children's Hospital, and UC San Diego Medical Center. There is currently no trauma center in East County, however. In the past 30 years, about 250,000 injured patients have received vital trauma care in the region. The County Health and Human Services Agency Emergency Medical Services triages patients to one of the six centers based on a number of factors, including geographic proximity. Whether arriving by ambulance, helicopter, or on foot, critically injured people are rapidly assessed and the coordination of trauma care begins. A trauma victim's chance of survival depends on immediate response, said Nick Maccioni, Director of Health and Human Services. The San Diego County Trauma System has been a great success because of the dedication and many years of hard work from the surgeons, nurses, and staffs of the trauma centers, as well as the pre-hospital and base hospital personnel and staff of EMS. Despite these successes, however, the lack of a trauma center in East County means patients in rural areas must still be transported long distances for treatment. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso. We open our show today with a very important health report. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there are about 200,000 people in the United States living with a spinal cord injury, many of those with partial paralysis or paraplegia. But now there is hope that some of them may soon be able to walk again. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration this week has approved marketing of the first wearable motorized exoskeleton device to help people with lower body paralysis due to a spinal cord injury stand on their own 2 feet once again. ReWalk is a motorized device worn over the legs and part of the upper body. It helps a person sit, stand, and walk again with help from a trained companion, such as a spouse or home health aide. Using a wireless remote control worn on the wrist, the user commands ReWalk to stand up, sit down, and walk. Larry Jasinski is the CEO of ReWalk Robotics. He says this revolutionary product will have an immediate life-changing impact on individuals with spinal cord injuries. Derek Herrera, a captain in the U.S. Marine Corps, is a paraplegic who trained on the ReWalk personal system, and he will be one of the first Americans to own his very own. I see this as a milestone for people in my same situation who will now have access to this technology, Captain Herrera said. The Marine Special Operations Command Foundation will be donating funds for a ReWalk system for Herrera, who works for the Marine Special Operations Command. It will be incredible for me to regain independence, to use the system to walk and stand on my own, Captain Herrera said. ReWalk can be used by people with paraplegia due to spinal cord injuries at levels T7, that's the 7th thoracic vertebrae, to L5, the 5th lumbar vertebrae, when accompanied by a specially trained caregiver. It is also for people with spinal cord injuries at levels T4 to T6, where the device is limited to use in rehab institutions. It is not intended for sports or for climbing stairs. Before being trained to use ReWalk, patients should be able to stand using an assistive standing device or a standing frame. Their hands and shoulders should be able to support crutches or a walker. Patients should not use the device if they have a history of severe neurological injuries other than the spinal cord injury or certain other medical restrictions. To assess the safety and effectiveness of ReWalk, the FDA reviewed testing and clinical data based on 30 study participants. The FDA is also requiring Argo Medical Technologies, Inc., the manufacturer of ReWalk, to complete a post-market clinical study. The system allows independent controlled walking while mimicking the natural gait patterns of the legs, similar to that of an able-bodied person. In addition to the ability to stand and walk independently, clinical studies of ReWalk rehab system show significant health benefits to the user on both the physiological and psychological level. Study data indicates potential improvements in cardiovascular health, loss of fat tissue, and building of lean muscle mass, according to ReWalk's manufacturer. Other potential benefits may include improved pain management and fewer hospitalizations. ReWalk was developed by Dr. Amit Gofer, an Israeli inventor who became a quadriplegic after an ATV accident in 1997. It was through his own personal experience in utilizing mobility devices for people with spinal cord injuries that Dr. Gofer developed the ReWalk. Founded in 2001, ReWalk Robotics is now a global company with headquarters in the U.S., Germany, and Israel. ReWalking is much more than walking, says Jeff Dykin, ReWalk's chairman of the board. ReWalk provides paralyzed individuals with the ability to stand and walk, to look someone in the eye, to hug, and to be hugged. These are simple acts which many of our ReWalkers thought they would never be able to do again. For more information, you can visit www.rewalk.com.
The ACLU is applauding the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that will require police to obtain a warrant to search a cell phone or smartphone. Linda Lai with the ACLU of Northern California says yesterday's unanimous ruling is a major victory for the privacy rights of all Americans as protected under the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution.
Digital data makes a difference. The Supreme Court drew a very, very firm line, and it's clear that law enforcement cannot engage in fishing expeditions simply because someone's been arrested.
The Supreme Court case involves plaintiffs who were originally arrested for minor crimes, but police searches of their cell phones led to more serious allegations. The ACLU says the ruling also is significant because 9 out of 10 Americans own a cell phone or smartphone. Lai says it also shows the U.S. Supreme Court is recognizing that privacy rights extend to our rapidly expanding digital world.
Cell phones are not like anything you would normally carry around in your pocket. They contain our entire lives. They reveal so much information about us. You can learn everything about the person. Thousands of pictures, millions of documents.
Lai says protecting privacy rights will become even more important as the lives of Americans increasingly migrate to the digital world. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
On Thursday, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled that a 35-foot buffer zone around abortion clinics in Massachusetts violates the free speech rights of protesters. But ironically, the High Court has its own far wider 100-foot-wide buffer zone to keep protesters away from the Supreme Court. Massachusetts passed its law to protect abortion workers and patients after a gunman killed two abortion clinic receptionists and wounded five others at two area clinics back in 1994. Violence against abortion providers has occurred elsewhere, notably the murder of Dr. George Tiller, a doctor who provided abortions in Kansas. Similar laws are on the books in other states, including California. But abortion opponents argued that such restrictions violate their First Amendment free speech rights. The case, McCullen v. Coakley, was filed on behalf of Eleanor McCullen, an opponent of abortion who wanted to speak face-to-face with women entering a Planned Parenthood clinic in Boston that offers abortion as well as other health services. The ruling was hailed by pro-life groups, who contend their members seek to stop violence against the unborn, but it was criticized by pro-choice organizations. Kristen Hawkins, president of Students for Life of America, called the decision wonderful news for all Americans because it upholds our crucial First Amendment rights of free speech, adding that it is also important for women considering abortion because it frees sidewalk counselors at abortion facilities to be able to offer what she called compassionate and caring alternatives. But the National Abortion Rights League, or NARAL, denounced the High Court's ruling. Let's be clear. Today's decision puts women and health care providers at greater risk, said NARAL pro-choice president Elise Hoag. While protesting at clinics is legal, obstructing sidewalks, threatening, intimidating, or committing violence against women seeking abortions or abortion clinic employees remain illegal under the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act signed into law by President Bill Clinton. But NARAL's Massachusetts Executive Director Megan Amundson said the buffer zone had worked to stop violence. Without it, she said, the only tool we have left to combat clinic violence is to prosecute people after they have committed violent acts. This decision turns back the clock to the days when women were too intimidated by protesters to seek medical care. Women's health will suffer because of it, she concluded. The High Court, in singling out buffer zones around abortion clinics, lets stand a double standard. Since buffer zones where protesters are banned have been allowed around an array of other places ranging from polling places to political conventions to the Supreme Court building itself. Thus, the ruling leaves some court pundits pondering, why do politicians, Supreme Court justices, and ordinary voters merit protection from protesters they may not wish to encounter, while women with unwanted pregnancies do not? Should one type of protest be any more or less deserving of free speech protection than any other? Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
It's officially summer and finally time to take that vacation. You can make your break even more stress-free by signing up for vacation checks from the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. The free vacation check service is offered to residents year-round. Residents who live in the unincorporated areas or sheriff contract cities can sign up to have a sheriff senior volunteer patrol come check on your home while you're away. The senior volunteer patrol will perform a security inspection outside the home Monday through Friday. They check to make sure doors, windows, and garages are locked. They also hide newspapers and packages in a side fence or back patio. If the patrol sees anything suspicious or unusual, like broken windows or open doors, they call a deputy to investigate. To sign up for the service, visit sdsheriff.net. Click on Vacation Home Checks box to get to the form, and then take it to your nearest sheriff station or substation to verify your identification. For those staying home, it's important not to get too lax with security around the house. As summer approaches, people take advantage of the sunny weather to do outdoor projects, take their family to fun places, relax, and keep cool. It can be easy to forget to close a door or window, but if they are left open, it creates an easy opportunity for a burglar. Sheriff Crime Prevention Specialists compiled some handy tips to help residents better safeguard their homes and vehicles when going on vacation. First, lock up your house. Activate your alarm. Then, don't broadcast your plans on social media. Hold the delivery of your mail and newspaper or ask a friend to pick them up for you. Buy a timer for your lights and set them at a random pattern. Ask a neighbor to occasionally park in your driveway. You can also sign up for a free vacation check so sheriff's senior volunteer patrol members can keep an eye on your house. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week.
This is Raina Menashe, guest hosting this week's Destination East County. Summer is officially here, and this week's Destination East County brings you plenty of sizzling summertime activities, from concerts and movies under the stars to night fishing, a chili cook-off, and a Firefighters Appreciation Day event to support our local heroes. On Wednesday, June 25th, Cajon Classic Cruise Car Show will be held with this week's theme, Charger Steve's Stars Cars, on East Main Street between Magnolia and Claydell Avenues. The 214 season is hosted by the Downtown Business Partners. For car show dates and themes all summer long, visit www.downtownec.com. Bring a lantern for night fishing under the stars at Santee Lakes on Thursday night, June 26th. No fishing licenses required, just a permit that you can pick up at the general store. The lake is stocked with bass and bluegill. You can fish off five docks or four fishable islands, as well as from the shore, making this a fun destination to bring the kids and get them hooked on fishing. Who's got the hottest chili in town? Firefighters from the Alpine, Viejas, and Sequan Fire Departments will be cooking up their entries in a chili-tasting challenge during the 4th Annual Firehouse Cook-Off on Thursday, June 26th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Alpine Library. The public is invited to meet the firefighters, sample chili in the cook-off, and vote on which team has the best culinary skills. East County cities are hosting concerts in several local parks this week. All of these concerts are free to the community. On Thursday, Santee hosts the Highwaymen at the Santee Town Center from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. On Friday night, El Cajon's Dinner and Concert Series presents the Jones Revival, performing new Southern rock from 6 to 8 p.m. Then on Sunday, June 29th, La Mesa's Sundays at 6 concert in Harry Griffin Park will feature trails and rails, cowboys and train songs. Bring your blankets, beach chairs, and barbecue or picnic dinner. The Legos Movie will be the feature film at this Friday night's Movies in the Park at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine. Showtime starts at 8 p.m. You can lounge under the stars in a serene park-like setting, and yes, you can even order popcorn. Firefighters put their lives on the line to save our communities. On Sunday, June 29th, the Bucking DeLorean Restaurant in Lakeside is hosting Firefighters Appreciation Day. All firefighters will receive discounts on food and drinks, or maybe even a free meal, since the public is encouraged to pay a firefighter's tab with donation boxes for that purpose. This event also features live bands all day, including Patrick Trampas and James Kramer from Barbed Wire. In addition, participants can ride a mechanical bull or try their hand at horseshoes in a horseshoe pit outside. The Bucking DeLorean is located at 10109 Main Avenue in Lakeside. For more information, call 619-561-6767. Now for a preview of some coming attractions. The City of El Cajon will host its annual 4th of July picnic and fireworks at Kennedy Park. The picnic begins at 1 p.m. with food, games, prizes, and train rides for children. Live musical entertainment begins at 3 p.m., with the highlight of the event, fireworks, at 9 p.m. Arrive early for parking and to find the ideal spot for your picnic and viewing the fireworks. The City of Santee will host its annual Santee Salutes event on July 4th from 3:30 to 10 p.m. at Town Center Community Park East, located at 550 Park Center Drive. This event includes live music featuring 80s all-stars, a patriotic ceremony, kids' fun zone with rides and more, and the grand finale, a dazzling fireworks display. Admission is free, though there is a parking fee at nearby lots, with parking costs supporting local youth sports leagues. Or you can take a free shuttle service from the Costco parking lot to the event. On Saturday, July 5th, KNSJ invites you to our community radio station's first anniversary party from 6:30 to 10 p.m. at the beautiful Mission Trails Regional Park Visitors Center. Come mix and mingle with our radio hosts and celebrity guests in a spectacular natural setting. Enjoy live music, Native American flute players, delicious food and drinks, stargazing, museum, no-host bar, two stages with comedy acts, and musical entertainment. For tickets and reservations, visit www.knsj.org. The 45th Annual Descanso Days Festival will be held July 12th at Descanso's historic town hall, along with a parade. This year's parade theme is Bonnets and Boots, with prizes for the best parade entries in several categories. The parade starts at 10 a.m. You can also listen to live music while savoring pit barbecued beef, cooked up by the master chefs of Pine Valley Mountain Riders. Just Friends will start the musical lineup with their bluegrass twang at 11 a.m., followed by Steve Hill and the Hill Country Band on the KSON flatbed stage from 1 to 5 p.m. There will also be a variety of activities, especially for kids, including wheelbarrow races, an egg toss, and a nail driving contest, as well as a best bonnet competition for all ages. A silent auction and drawings will also be held for items ranging from hay bales to Aztec tickets. The roads close at 9:30 a.m. for the parade and reopen after the parade, so visitors are encouraged to arrive early. Kids of all ages are invited to join the fun and showcase pets at the first annual pet parade and St. Adelaide Parish Family Festival on July 12th at the Campo Baseball Field. The parade begins at 11 a.m., and the festival runs from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Parade entrants are invited to decorate a wagon or stroller for your pet, or walk with your pets on a leash. Pre-registration is required by 5 p.m., Friday, July 11th. Prizes will be awarded for the most creative and most entertaining costumes, as well as the pastor's choice. Drawings will also be held for prizes, including a half a steer to fill your freezer, donated by Wright Ranch of Potrero. The festival also includes vendor booths, inflatable slide and water combo, face painting, and refreshments. Registration forms and flyers for this event are available on our website at www.eastcountymagazine.org. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found in our calendar and in the festival and events section at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
See you around, East County!
New guidelines have been issued to help low-income people in our area pay their utility bills and make their homes more energy efficient. More San Diego Gas and Electric customers are now eligible to save on their monthly bills and receive energy-efficient home improvements by enrolling in two money-saving state-sponsored customer assistance programs called California Alternate Rates for Energy, or CARE, CARE, and the Energy Savings Assistance Program. Income guidelines for the program will be in effect from June 1, 2014 to May 31, 2015. Eligible customers can qualify based on their total household income or participation in certain public assistance programs such as WIC, WIC, or Supplemental Security Income. For customers who are recently unemployed, household income is calculated from the date of unemployment. The qualifications are on a sliding scale based on household size as well as income. For example, households of two with a yearly income of $31,460 or less qualify for the program. That's a huge jump from before, when only those earning $22,980 or less were eligible. A family of four can qualify with an income of $47,400 or less, while a family of eight could qualify with an income up to $80,180. There are several additional tiers in the program. Nearly 300,000 residents within SDG&E's service territory are participating in the CARE program, and an estimated 80,000 more are eligible. The Energy Savings Assistance Program provides free home improvements and appliances that can make homes more comfortable and energy efficient. This year, the program aims to provide home improvements to over 20,000 households, such as weather stripping, attic insulation, minor home repairs, and replacement of appliances. SDG&E customers can easily apply for the programs any of the following ways. Call 211 and ask about the CARE or Energy Savings Assistance Program. Call the Energy Savings Assistance Program toll-free enrollment line at 866-597-0597. Log on to sdgne.com/assistance or look inside your July SDG&E bill for more information about CARE or C-A-R-E. In addition to the CARE program and the Energy Savings Assistance Program, SDG&E also offers a variety of other assistance programs, such as reduced energy costs for customers with certain medical conditions or need equipment, and payment extensions for those who need extra help. Medical Baseline provides an additional baseline allowance, electricity and gas at the lowest rate for customers who have medical conditions or medical equipment that impact their bill. Neighbor to Neighbor is a fund that provides grants to help customers pay their gas and electric bills. Family Electric Rate Assistance, the FERA, gives lower electricity rates for large households of three or more persons. And finally, the Level Payment Plan allows for monthly payments to be spread equally throughout the year. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.